Welcome to Earth Matters on Gila Members Community Radio, KURU, at 89.1 FM, the show that brings you in-depth coverage of local, regional, and national environmental issues. I'm Donna Stevens, the Executive Director of the Upper Gila Watershed Alliance, a local watershed protection nonprofit, and I'm your host for today's program. Today we're going to be talking about the New Mexico Department of Game and Fish and their proposed new rules for trapping and killing bears and cougars, also known as mountain lions. Game and Fish will make their decision at their August 27th meeting, so depending on when you're listening to this show, that decision may already have occurred. Joining me today to talk by phone is Mary Catherine Ray, the Wildlife Chair for the Sierra Club's Rio Grande chapter. Good morning, Mary Catherine.
Good morning, Donna. Thank you.
I'm glad you could join us. I wanted to just start out the show by saying that there's two agencies that have very similar names, and I used to get them confused. I finally have it straightened out in my head, but I thought, just for our listeners who may be also a little unclear, that I would just say that there's an agency called U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and as the name implies, that's a federal agency. And then there's the agency we're going to be talking about in today's show, the New Mexico Department of Game and Fish. Mary Catherine, can you give us a brief background about this state agency, what their stated mission is, and what they do?
Yes. As you said, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is a federal agency, and they have jurisdiction over endangered species and migratory birds, so ducks and also raptors, things like that. You know, the broad protections that have nationwide jurisdiction, that's what the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service does. The New Mexico Department of Game and Fish holds all the wildlife in New Mexico in trust that's not governed by the federal government, in trust for all of the people. So all the wildlife in New Mexico actually belongs to all of the people in New Mexico. And it's that agency, the Department of Game and Fish, that regulates the hunting of some species, certainly not all, but, you know, that's who you buy an elk license from, or a license to fish, or a license to kill bears or cougars.
Okay. Can you talk about the relationship between the Game Commission and the Game Department and how decisions are ultimately made?
Yes, the Game Commission is appointed by the governor, and it's seven people. There's five of them who represent different areas of the state. So people in Silver City are represented by a person who is in the Southwest District, and then there's a Northwest, Northeast, and then Southeast and Central. Those are the five geographic districts. And then two of the members serve at large. And they, as I said, are appointed by the governor, so they're not elected, but they do make the determination of what happens at the department. So the hunting rules, all the issues that surround wildlife that are regulated by the Department of Game and Fish, the final arbiter of that is the Game Commission. Now, in practice, the department actually makes recommendations to the Game Commission. So you've got kind of a situation where the commissioners are supposed to be the boss of the department, but a lot of times the department has significant guidance in those decisions. And in an ideal world, that would be good. But we have a situation where, because they are appointed and not elected, we do have some factions that have undue influence, and a lot of the times, it seems to me, the decisions being made are pretty political and not science-based, and certainly not made with the interests of all New Mexicans.
So the governor can appoint people to the commission who she favors their opinions, or they have some influence in some other way, perhaps?
Yes. She can appoint anyone she wants to. I mean, there is a rule. There can be no more. There's seven people on it. There can be no more than four from one political party. But in the past, there have been situations where people change parties just so they could be appointed to the commission, you know, to fulfill that role. And that's not illegal. That's just what the rule says.
Okay.
So they don't have to have any biological background. They don't have to be scientists. We find ourselves today, every single one of them is a hunter. There's no non-hunters. And there's actually, you know, the Department of Game and Fish makes a lot of money from selling fishing licenses, but you almost never hear the Game Commission even discuss fishing. So I think it's very heavily weighted towards hunting and hunting interests. and that's not illegal. It's the governor's prerogative.
There don't have to be any conservationists whatsoever. Not that a hunter couldn't be a conservationist, but there doesn't have to be a conservationist on the commission.
Yeah, there doesn't. And, you know, given that wildlife is certainly cared about by people who don't hunt, it seems very unjust to me. I mean, we know from a Fish and Wildlife Service survey, this is a federal agency that surveys all the states, that wildlife-associated recreation that is non-consumptive, people who don't hunt but who enjoy wildlife and actually who make a point to go out in the wild for the purpose of seeing wildlife, not just because they incidentally see it while they're camping, but they purposefully go out to see wildlife or to photograph it, we outnumber, and I say we because I'm among that crowd, they actually outnumber hunters in New Mexico by a fraction of 8-1.
Wow.
We contribute more to the state economy than hunting does, but we really don't have a voice on the Game Commission. And there's a lot of people who are saying that needs to be changed, but it would take changing the law to do it.
Right. Well, that's kind of a good segue into what we're going to talk about today, because today's topic is about these proposed rule changes for bears and cougars. And this is an issue that is very important to conservation-minded people. And so let's get into that. There's two species that we're talking about, bears and cougars, that will be affected by these proposed rule changes should they be approved at the August 27th meeting. So let's take these critters one at a time, and just for fun, let's talk about bears first. So could you tell us what the Bear Rule Review is all about?
Yes. So as I said, the Department of Game and Fish issues hunting licenses for bears. Bears are allowed to be hunted in New Mexico. And the department is actually charged with maintaining a plentiful supply of the wildlife that they issue licenses for hunters to kill. And so every 4 years, for all of the big game species, the rules for hunting are put up for review, which means we're going to take a look at them and see what we need to change. And so that's where we are for both bears and cougars. Those species are reviewed together, and the last time we reviewed them, we looked at them, was in 2011. We changed the rules, and I might add that at that point, this was back when the controversial Jim Lane, who's now been removed in disgrace from not only Game and Fish but also from the state land office, he came up with some, in my mind, just jaw-droppingly high quotas for both bears and cougars, and we've been living with those for the last 4 years. So that's where we are. We're in this process now of re-engaging that review, and shockingly, they're proposing raising the quotas even more.
So you already thought they were high, and now Game and Fish is proposing to make them even higher.
Even higher, yes.
Well, my next question is, will bear populations be harmed if the Game Department proposals are approved? And it sounds like, from what you're saying, that the answer is yes, they will be harmed.
Yeah, I'm really concerned. You know, we don't have a plan. A lot of states will have what's called a management plan. I mean, the word management implies that, you know, we're going to do something and we're going to measure what we do and keep track of what we do, and we're going to have a way to measure the outcome and see if it actually meets a goal that we previously set. We don't have that for bears or cougars. So it's really hard to tell what the goal is for the Department of Game and Fish regarding the bear population. But the situation is this, and I can just briefly talk about the justifications the department is using. They commissioned a study that was done by a student at New Mexico State University, being overseen by a professor, to look at bear population density using, they're calling them hair snares, which is a really kind of a cool way to observe bears, because you set up an attractive lure, odor-attractive lure, that bears will be drawn to, and around it you put like barbed wire or something that will snag the hairs the bear passes over. So the bear doesn't have to be caught in a trap, doesn't have to be tranquilized. It's a very non-invasive way that I think takes into consideration bear well-being in a nice way. And from those hair samples, we can get DNA to actually identify individual bears. So it's a good study, and I don't have any problems with the methodology, although it hasn't been published, so we only have summaries. We don't really have a way to examine everything about that study. They did this study they picked three mountain ranges to put their study plots, the Sangre de Cristo's in the north, the Sandia's in the middle, and the Sacramento's in the south. And from that, where they chose their study area was determined by it being on a map of primary bear habitat from a map of 2001. A long bear study occurred then, and in 2001 this map was generated. So they chose the primary bear habitat areas. You would expect them to have the richest amount of bears, and they came up with population densities for each of these three mountain ranges. But the Department of Game and Fish is raising the bear quotas in all of the mountain ranges, in all the places where bears live. And how are they doing this? It's really jaw-dropping to me, because, you know, I'm thinking, well, did they apply the densities they got in the study areas to other mountain ranges, which would be completely inappropriate because the densities aren't even, you know, comparable to each other when we measured them. And what has happened is that they generated a new map. And the new map is from 2015, based on satellite information, from satellite photos, that makes them conclude we have all this extra bear habitat that we didn't know we had. And the problem is, did anybody set up a hair snare in this new primary bear habitat to see if the densities match what we found in the other already known primary bear habitats? And the answer is no. We have not corroborated this extra bear habitat that, you know, suddenly appeared to see if it in fact does have, even if it has any bears in it. So we're basically shooting in the dark, raising the bear quotas by 25%, and with no scientific basis to actually say if that's even reasonable. What we do have, and this is something that really concerns me, this is the reality. The bear quotas went up 4 years ago drastically. And we killed, in the 3 years after that, I can just give you the numbers, like 777, 713, then 775. Those are the 3 years after we raised the bear rule. The following year, which was last year, we killed 559. Despite the fact that the number of hunters who bought licenses stayed the same, the kill dropped by 28% with no other change in rules. So it actually, I mean, that's real. That is something that's not on paper. That is a real occurrence. We're killing 28% fewer bears without any change in the rules. So it has the appearance of, you know, the hunting numbers are the same. People buying licenses are the same. It has the appearance that bears are, in fact, getting harder to kill. And now we're proposing to raise the kill up to over 800 bears a year, which, by the way, is a historical high. That exceeds the average of something like 330 bears that's been in place for like the last 20, 25 years. It is very concerning.
Well, let's talk about that some more after we take a little break here. We'll continue with Mary Catherine Ray talking about bear and cougar proposed rule changes, Game and Fish proposed rule changes. We'll come back to Earth Matters on Gila Members Community Radio, 89.1 FM. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM. I'm Donna Stevens, your host for today's program. Joining me by phone today is the Wildlife Chair of the Sierra Club's Rio Grande Chapter, Mary Catherine Ray, and we're talking about the New Mexico Department of Game and Fish's proposed rule changes for bears and cougars. So right before the break, Mary Catherine, you said some things that cited some numbers of bears that have been killed in the last several years that I frankly found pretty alarming. And I wonder if you could repeat those numbers again, just for people who either didn't hear you before or are as flabbergasted as I am by those numbers.
Right. It's hard. It's almost like you can't even think you heard it right. But
yes.
4 years ago, we raised the bear quotas, and starting in 2011, the annual kill was 777 bears. In 2012, 713. In 2013, 775. And then in 2014, it dropped precipitously by 28% to 559, with no change in the number of hunting licenses that were sold. So the Department of Game and Fish has offered no explanation for this drop. They've just said it's an anomaly. But now they're proposing, even in this environment, to raise the quotas to over 800 bears, to 804. That would be statewide that could be killed by hunters. That is pretty alarming. And I should also add, the department does keep a sub limit for females, like the proportion of the kill that can be females, because we know females are basically what determine the population of bears. They're the ones that have the cubs. They reproduce very slowly compared to other species. They don't have their first litter of cubs till they're between 4 and 5 years old, and often that first litter is usually just one cub, you know, as they're young. Bears can live to be nearly 30 years old. They have a natural lifespan that's decades long. In New Mexico, the average age of a bear that gets shot by hunters is about 6. So we really aren't, you know, a female bear is lucky to have one cub before she gets shot. And we're allowing that off that percentage of the kill that's female. Shouldn't, I mean, when I look at the literature, typically it should be about 30%. There are some bear researchers that say, no, it should be even less than that should be female. And once you've killed that many, you need to shut that unit down and have no more hunting there. New Mexico Game and Fish is proposing to allow the female kill to be 41% of the total, which is also extremely alarming.
So can I ask you, how do we know how many bears have been killed? If a hunter gets a bear, are they required to report that?
Yes. Thankfully, we do have a handle on that. So all of across the state is divided into bear management zones, and each zone has a different bear quota and female sublimit to go along with that, so the numbers are defined. The licenses are sold over the counter, so anybody who wants a license can go buy one. That means anybody who wants to go hunt can go hunt. With this caveat, when you go hunting for a bear and you kill one, you're required to call a special phone number and report that you killed a bear and its gender. And the game department keeps a tally of that. And once the quota is reached, I think they actually give a leeway, 10%, within 10% of the quota is reached, either for the total number of bears or for the number of females that are allowed. That unit gets shut down for hunting. The hunting is closed no matter, even if the season is still, you know, the season date closes way away. And so bear hunters are required when they go hunting to actually call the number and see if the unit where they plan to hunt is still open. And what's happening is so many bears are getting killed so quickly that a lot of hunters who have bought purchase licenses call and they find out they can't go hunting in the unit they wanted to go. So that's how the system works and how they keep track of bears that are killed.
How do they keep track of how old the bear is that's been killed?
The hunter is then required to go turn in. He's got to have the pelt of the bear tagged, and he's got to take the skull. They've got to take parts of the bear out of the field. They're not required to take the meat, but the skin and some body parts, genitalia, I think, and the skull. And the department then tags the bear hide, which makes it legal to sell, interestingly. Bear hides can be sold. And they take a tooth. And because bears eat a lot during the summer and practically none during the winter because they're sleeping, they're dormant, their teeth grow at different rates. And so they actually have rings that, I mean, if you take a cross-section of a bear tooth, you can get an idea of how old it is because you can see these annual rings that are formed. So that's how we know how old they are.
Okay. So I have a pretty basic question to ask. Why does Game and Fish want to increase the number of bears that are allowed to be killed in the state?
You know, good question. They certainly are not talking about why. They may be getting some pressure from hunters, as I said, who everyone, you know, who buys a license doesn't get an opportunity to hunt, and they want more, quote, opportunity. It certainly doesn't seem to be conservation-minded. In fact, it seems the opposite. It's as though they are purposefully trying to reduce the bear population, but they're not saying that. As I said, we don't have a management plan, so we don't know what their motivations are. We don't know what their goals are. It's just a big heap of concern for me. I mean, I don't know what else to call it. I look at these proposals with great trepidation because bears do reproduce so slowly. If we harm and impair the population, it's going to be a long time coming back.
Is Game and Fish proposing to open any additional areas to bear hunting, or just to increase the numbers that will be that are allowed to be harvested, to use their euphemism, in all the bear management areas?
Yes. Just as an aside, let me say how much I hate that word harvest.
Yes.
I mean, in my mind, if you didn't plant it, you don't get to harvest it.
Right.
It's a different word. I mean, you know, if you can't call it what it is, which is killing, you know, maybe that's a little message to you about how discomforting it is. But anyway, no, pretty much everywhere where bears are open to hunting now. There's some, you know, restrictions, national parks and monuments, you know, some limited areas like that where bears are not molested by hunters, but pretty much everywhere else is already open. So, as I said, the bear management zones have all been established, and they're pretty much, they're all in place, and that's not really changing much.
Well, I know often when there's some action that perplexes conservationists, we know that we need to so-called follow the money. Is there a money component here, perhaps, in selling bear licenses?
Well, the department doesn't make a lot of money on either bear or cougar licenses. I mean, they're not that expensive. There may be some push from livestock interests who have found that they can make more money selling guided hunts than they can livestock, you know, out on our national forests. That may be part of it. They did do a study at the Valles Caldera where they found that one of the things that was limiting elk recruitment was that bears would kill elk calves very shortly after they were born. But I don't think they've ever shown that that was actually a factor limiting the elk population. In fact, studies I've seen elsewhere that predation of calves typically takes the animals out that, you know, by a year would be dead anyway. So we call that mortality compensatory as opposed to additive. In other words, it takes out the surpluses, I guess if you want to call it that, and doesn't really influence the population. I mean, I could see that the department does make a huge amount of money selling elk licenses, and maybe they, you know, just don't want the competition from anything, so they want every calf elk to grow up to provide more targets for their hunters who do pay a lot of money for that. But again, we're just guessing. There's really no way to know what their motivation is.
And are we talking about killing bears only on public land or public and private land?
Public and private. The quotas are for the entire bear management zone. So there's no distinction made for a bear. Does it count or not count depending on the land status? It counts.
Mary Catherine, I already asked you earlier in the show why Game and Fish wanted to increase the number of bears that are allowed to be killed, and you talked about a couple of ideas. And I was wondering if one of the causes could possibly be that there's been more bear-human interactions.
I don't believe there has been. I mean, bears sometimes do get into trouble with people. There's no doubt about that. But there's a lot that people can do to minimize conflict with bears. You know, bring in your bird seed at night. Make sure there's no dog food available for bears. I mean, bears have to eat a lot of food, especially this time of year as they're preparing to go into dormancy, into hibernation. And this is will just knock your socks off. Bears have to eat, starting right about now, about 20,000 calories a day.
Wow.
Because they're eating for the time when they're not eating, which is during the winter. So they just are eating and eating and eating. And mostly what they eat is termites and ants, berries, grass. They eat a lot of vegetable matter and carrion, stuff like that, but they're very opportunistic, so we need to make sure we're not actually attracting them into places where they shouldn't be. If you see a bear in the wild, humans really are not on their menu. Every time I run into a bear, and I can, you know, maybe a dozen times or so, basically me just hiking and there's a bear, as soon as they realize that I'm present, it basically scares them out of their wits. They turn and turn tail so fast. I think I've actually heard bears compared to just big raccoons. So it's just a matter of us being smart. You know, we're in their habitat, and they really are not problem animals for humans.
That's been my experience as well when I've been out in the wild. I remember one occasion when I was with four people and a dog, and we saw a bear who quickly ran up a cottonwood tree, and as soon as our dog was restrained, the bear came back down and ran away. So it wanted absolutely nothing to do with us and certainly nothing to do with our dog. So yeah. I mean, I think there's circumstances where it could be a little more dangerous, but mostly it isn't. And there's just kind of a fear there, perhaps, that isn't warranted.
Right. Well, they're big.
Yes,
you know,
they're big. They're scary.
There's nothing between you and a bear but air. It's very awe-inspiring. But, yeah, they very much... they very much seem to want to avoid people. And, you know, the reason about the dog is they're hunted using dogs in New Mexico. That's the main way hunters will set dogs out on a bear trail and chase the bear until it does go up a tree, which is then where the hunter will kill it.
One more question about bears. Are they only killed or are they trapped as well?
It's not legal. If a bear is caught in a trap, and the answer is yes, we are setting a lot of traps in New Mexico for other species, and those traps are not discriminating. A trap cannot tell the difference between, a fox, a coyote, a bobcat, a bear, a wolf, a javelina. I mean, all of those things we know get caught in traps, and bears are among them. In fact, there's a group called Born Free USA that did a trapping expose where they actually had a person who made himself appear to be someone who wanted to learn about trapping, actually in Pennsylvania. And just by luck for us, this trapper group came to New Mexico on a little vacation because our trapping rules are so lax and we offer some different species that Pennsylvania doesn't. And they did catch, in the time they were here, at least one black bear in a trap. And I don't know what the outcome was. I've heard of several other instances where people have let us know that they have found bears in traps, but the Department of Game and Fish does not keep track of this, of non-target animals in traps, so we really don't know what the collateral damage from trapping from other species is for bears.
Okay. Well, let's leave it there for talking about bears. When we come back from our short break, we'll continue talking with Mary Catherine Ray, and we will be talking about cougars. We'll switch from bears to cougars or mountain lions. So stay with us, please, here on Gila Members Community Radio. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM. I'm Donna Stevens, your host for today's show. And joining me by phone is Mary Catherine Ray, who is the Wildlife Chair of the Sierra Club's Rio Grande chapter. And we are talking about the New Mexico Department of Game and Fish's proposed rule changes for bears and cougars. So in the first half of the show, we were talking about how these rules would change hunting numbers for bears in the state. And now we're going to switch and talk about cougars or mountain lions. So can you tell us, Mary Catherine, what is the current situation with hunting and trapping mountain lions on both public and private land here in New Mexico?
Mountain lions can indeed be hunted in New Mexico on both public and private land, much the way bears can. And in the same way as bears, there is a quota, and people who hunt mountain lions, when they kill one, are required to report the kill to the Department of Game and Fish. And, you know, the department keeps track of that. There's a significant difference, though, and that is, unlike bears, the quotas for cougars are not being met. So even though we raised them drastically again, just like bears, in 2011, they were already not being met even before we did that. There's a limited number of mountain lion hunters. Apparently you have to have specialized dogs in order to trail cougars, in order to tree them and kill them. And we don't really have, well, it's hard to know, do we not have enough hunters? Are they not being able to find enough cougars to meet the quotas? But in any event, the quotas were raised, and they're still not being met. We're still killing the same number of mountain lions as we did prior to the rule change 4 years ago, and that's on the order between 200 and 300 a year. And the department, cougars do get into a little bit more trouble with people generally than bears do, especially when it comes to livestock. Bears are not well known for killing, you know, cows and calves, and bear and sheep country don't really overlap very much in New Mexico, but that's not true for mountain lions. And there seems to be a concerted push to kill more mountain lions in New Mexico. We saw in the legislature last January a representative from Rio Doso introduce legislation that would have removed all protections from mountain lions, basically made a mountain lion the same as a coyote. You see one, you can kill it any time of year, in any number, any age, spotted kittens, doesn't matter, kill them all. And luckily or happily, that bill failed. But now we're seeing some pushback, I think, to the department by the same interest, trying to increase the number of cougars that we kill. This rule review is kind of a little misleading in that anytime the Game Commission wants to make a change, they can. There's no restriction. And in fact, they've done that within the last 4 years. In, I think it was 2013, because we're not meeting not even the old quotas, not even the new quotas, they increased the hunting of cougars from its previous, like, five-month season to now it's year-round. There is no time you can't go out and shoot cougars if you purchase a hunting license. And they raised the bag limit to 2. So now you can kill 2 a year instead of just 1, but they're still not meeting the quotas. And so that's why we're seeing some now interesting, in the pejorative sense of that word, changes to the cougar rule.
So is the cougar rule, is that, are they proposing to increase the quotas again on mountain lions, even though we already aren't meeting those quotas currently?
No, they're not. So they're not proposing to raise the quotas.
Okay.
What they're proposing is novel ways to kill more cougars, and that's now including allowing the trapping of mountain lions, which, by the way, no state allows except the state of Texas, which does treat mountain lions like coyotes. And they really don't have any idea what effect that's having on their population, but I've read studies that indicate it's possible the only reason mountain lions persist in Texas is because they're coming over from Mexico where they're not quite so persecuted. I mean, it's hard to believe that we persecute our mountain lions more than Mexico does, but it's true. So we only find mountain lions in Texas in the border states along the Rio Grande, and that's the only place they really seem to persist. And so to say that Texas is a good model for cougar management is highly questionable. So because we're not meeting the quotas now, they're not proposing to raise them, they're proposing allowing this trapping. And this is not for depredation. This isn't if you have a problem cougar. This is trapping for fun and profit. We know, as with bears, we know mountain lions are being caught in traps now, in traps that are set for other things like coyotes or bobcats. But the rule is now the mountain lion has to be released, whether or not, you know, the lion suffers injury, and sometimes those injuries are severe enough to impair the lion to the point of, you know, compromising survival. The department doesn't really know that because it doesn't keep track. But this would definitely, I think, attract trappers to our state because it's so uncommon that a mountain lion can be trapped and killed. We could really kill a lot more cougars that way, assuming there are more cougars to kill. I mean, we don't really know that, but that's what the department is assuming.
Well, let me play devil's advocate here for just a moment and ask you, since cougars are considered to be varmint by some people, what good are they? Why do we want them anyway?
I'm so glad you asked that question. And it has a lot of biological but also moral implications, the answer does. Biologically speaking, we know that carnivores, especially large ones like cougars or jaguars or wolves, are really important to keeping the balance of nature intact. Early in the 1900s, hunters did an experiment in Arizona on the Kaibab Plateau, where they killed every mountain lion they could find with the purpose in mind of raising the deer population in order to make more targets for hunters. It would be a hunter's paradise is what they thought, and they did an incredible job. They really exterminated mountain lions from the region, and as Aldo Leopold said, it was as though God was given a pair of pruning shears and forbidden any other exercise. The deer exploded. And ate and ate and ate, and to the point where, I mean, you can still see the damage today. It was just a very eye-opening, and I think a lesson to humans that, you know, nature has the creatures it has for a reason. Everything serves a purpose, or it wouldn't exist, which comes to the moral and ethical view. You know, we did not create the world we live in. It was bestowed upon us as an incredible gift. And I think we have a moral obligation to care for that creation, if you want to call it that, however it came to be, which who really knows. But, you know, Pope Francis has talked about that in his new encyclical. And, you know, we, in the end, you know, we depend on the health of watersheds, on healthy forests to absorb pollutants. And all of those things depend on the complete cohort of herbivores and carnivores in numbers that nature determines, because nature abhors a vacuum. She'll do it right if we let her.
Yeah, that's something that kind of concerns me, is that once you start messing with one species and so-called managing it, where does it end? You know, if they're a predator, then, you know, then you start getting run over with whoever their prey are, and it's just kind of a snowball effect that just keeps going. And it just seems like to me that it would be better to just leave it alone and, like you said, let nature take care of it, because she knows what she's doing.
Right, and especially with cougars. You know, cougars, one of the most, if you do leave them alone, okay, will we become knee-deep in cougars? Is that, you know, around every bush there will be one waiting to attack us? The answer is no. One of the chief causes of death in cougars is other cougars. They kill each other. I mean, you know, for us, we don't kill each other. We think that's wrong. But in the cougar system, that's the way they work. And an adult male tom cougar will keep other mountain lions out. He will limit the cougar density in his territory, either by killing them or scaring them away. If you take him out, if you hunt him and remove him, then juvenile cougars will move in, and they don't limit territory so much. They're not that big yet until they grow up on keeping other cougars out. So right away, take out one, you could end up with two or three coming to his funeral, increasing the cougar density, which is kind of an odd, counterintuitive thing to happen. If you remove one, you get, you know, three.
Right.
And each one of those is taking out deer. And those young juvenile cougars, they'll kill cougar kittens. They'll kill unusual prey because they really don't know what they're doing. They might even try for a human, dogs, sheep. You know, they'll take out things. They're the ones who get in trouble with people. So hunting can actually, in a perverse way, increase conflict with people.
Interesting. You said earlier, Mary Catherine, that some of the reasons, some of the kind of hypothetical reasons why game and fish might be wanting to change these rules to allow trapping is because cougars do get into more trouble, as you said, with humans and humans' livestock. Are there any other reasons that game and fish puts forth as their rationale for these proposed changes?
As with bears, we really don't know. I mean, there's certainly the possibility they want fewer deer killed. Again, to leave, like we're, you know, it's like we've done this experiment already, but it's like we forgot to leave more deer for their hunters. It's true, mule deer populations do seem to be in decline, and I haven't seen. We know drought is a significant factor in fawn survival. If it's dry, it's really hard for a mother to get her fawn up to a year old. She has trouble nursing. She has trouble getting enough food for herself. I even had a game department deer biologist say, if a fawn is delivered more than a mile from water, the mother will just abandon the fawn. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, if a mountain lion gets that fawn, I don't think you can blame the mountain lion. We've also, so it could be a hunting thing. It could also be, you know, elk are going up everywhere, at least what I can see in New Mexico, and I have not seen much in the way of conflict between elk and mule deer. Elk are a bigger animal. It seems to me in the time I've lived in southwest New Mexico that as elk go up, deer have gone down. You know, of course, killing mountain lions is not going to help that. And in other states, we've seen, like Nevada, cougars are in trouble or persecuted virtually in a lot of other states. And they're trying to boost their mule deer populations, but they don't have good data that killing mountain lions actually has any effect on deer populations, maybe in some limited instances, but certainly not broadly.
You were saying earlier how for the bears, there is no management goal, at least that we know of, at least not that game and fish is divulging. And is that also true with cougars? We don't exactly know what their management plan is.
Yeah, we don't, you know. So what is the ultimate population? And actually, unlike bears, where we do have some interesting, you know, recent bear studies using the hair snares, we don't have that for mountain lions. So unlike bears, we really can't even say how many mountain lions we have with any certainty. The department has said that they would like to do a similar hair collecting study for mountain lions to determine what the actual mountain lion densities are in New Mexico, but that study hasn't even been started. I don't even think they have the funding yet for it. So, you know, we don't even know what, it's like we have a bank account, we don't know how much money is in it, but we're going to start withdrawing money anyway. So.
Okay, well, that's a good stopping point here, and we'll just take a short break, and we'll come back and talk more with Mary Catherine Bray about New Mexico Department of Game and Fish's proposed rule changes for cougars. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM. This is Donna Stevens, your host for today's show, and I am talking with Mary Catherine Bray, the Wildlife Chair of the Sierra Club's Rio Grande Chapter. And we are talking about the New Mexico Department of Game and Fish and their proposed rule changes for bears and cougars. So we've already talked about bears in the first half of the show, and now we're continuing with mountain lions. So I wanted to ask you, how will state trust lands be affected by this cougar rule change?
If the change is approved, the state land office, now under the land commissioner Aubrey Dunn, has requested that cougar trapping be allowed on state trust land. In addition, the department is proposing to allow it on private land. I'm very pleased to say that the proposal started out allowing trapping for mountain lions everywhere on public land, too. And there were meetings around the state, and I know in other places besides Silver City, but also Silver City, a lot of people turned up basically decrying this proposal to allow trapping. So the department has withdrawn the public land part of it. So now we're just looking at state trust land and private land. A lot of people think, well, isn't state trust land public? It's certainly owned by the public. It doesn't have no interest, or no person has more of a say in its ownership, but it's managed slightly differently as opposed to the federal BLM or national forest land. So you can't technically go on state trust land for recreation unless you buy a permit from the state land office. It costs $25, and you're allowed to go hiking and, you know, wildlife photography. You're not allowed to camp overnight. Hunters have a deal that's made between the Department of Game and Fish and the state land office that grants them an easement. So if they hold a hunting license from the Department of Game and Fish, they're allowed to go hunt on state trust land. And the department actually pays the land office for that privilege. The money that's collected by the state land office then is used for funding New Mexico schools and hospitals. You know, it's run by the state land commissioner, and he is probably the second most powerful person in the state of New Mexico. He is not overseas elected, but no one oversees him. There's no commission that tells him what he can and can't do. He unilaterally can decide what goes on state trust land, except for hunting of regulated species, and the mountain lion is one. So he can allow coyote killing contests, which the previous land commissioner didn't, and he's now asking, since coyotes aren't regulated, he can make that decision, but he's now asking that mountain lions be allowed to be trapped on state trust land.
Let me just ask you a question to make sure that I understood correctly what you said a few minutes ago. So you're saying that mountain lions cannot be trapped on public lands, federal public lands, such as BLM or national forests, is that right?
By law, they're not supposed to, you're not supposed to set a trap for them.
Okay.
But again, we know mountain lions are being caught in traps set for other species, like bobcats and coyotes. The difference is the trapper has to let the mountain lion go. He can't keep the mountain lion. In fact, we know at the last game commission meeting in Taos, a trapper stood up trying to support the rules, you know, to allow trapping, and he said, "I've caught two mountain lions, and I sure would like to keep one." It's definitely, there's no place to report non-target animal captures, but by his own words, he let us know that indeed he has. The Born Free investigation that we mentioned earlier that caught a bear with, you know, the undercover person who came out to learn to trap, while they were in New Mexico, they also caught at least two mountain lion kittens. A trap can't make the distinction, and a mountain lion kitten is not that different in size from a bobcat. I don't know what happened to those kittens, but you know, the rule is you just have to let them go. And so you let them go, you walk away, and there's a kitten just sitting there with whatever injury she has and no mom around or no mom that anyone could see. You know, the outlook, I think, is probably not that good for such an animal.
And hunters, and or rather trappers, don't have to report that they have trapped a mountain lion and, you know, that they've inadvertently caught one in their trap and they were looking for something else? They don't have to report that in any way?
They're supposed to report the things like bobcats and foxes that they're after. I mean, that's, you know, the number of traps trappers can set is unlimited, except that they have to check them every calendar day. And the number of animals they kill is unlimited. I mean, like bobcats, foxes, badgers, all the what we call, quote, fur bearers, little bearers of fur, as if that were their only purpose. But they're not required to report non-target. So we don't know, like, the number of dogs, for instance, or birds, or squirrels, or javelina or coati. Those animals cannot be trapped legally, or bears or cougars. There is a proposal. I don't know how far it's going to go. The chair of the Game Commission has actually floated the idea that they should be required to report non-target animals. And interestingly, that there should be a place where people who don't trap can report animals that they find in traps, including their own dogs. And it was pretty interesting at the last commission meeting that trappers came out in opposition to that. Wonder why? Well, their explanation is that people would lie about their dog being caught. So as he said that, I thought, well, you know, trappers can actually lie right now about how many bobcats are being caught. So I don't think that should be an impediment, but we'll have to see. I mean, I haven't, that's just been a proposal. There isn't even a comment period on that right now, so it may not go anywhere.
So I wanted to ask you, Mary Catherine, we've started talking about some of the human interactions here, human reactions to these rule changes. How have conservationists responded to these proposed changes?
With outcry. You know, because we apparently are not on the in with the Game Commission, we have no representation there. It seems sometimes to me that, you know, if a rancher wants something, he just has to whisper it, and we have to shout it. We have to encourage people to send in comments, you know, to show up to the Game Commission meetings, and we'll just have to see what the outcome is. As I said, the vote is going to be next week on Thursday.
And that date is?
It's the 27th of August. And, you know, that's what we'll be stuck with for the next 4 years. It's worth noting, if it doesn't come out very well for wildlife, and I think it could, it may well not come out that way, the Game Commission is appointed by the governor, and the governor comes up for election, and we'll have to wait 3 years, but, you know, don't forget, everyone. That's something that we need to remember when we cast our votes.
Yes. Could you also tell us how hunters in the state have responded to this rule change? Are they generally in favor of it, as far as you know?
At the Taos Game Commission meeting, I was very surprised. We had a wonderful attendance. It was on a Saturday, which the Game Commission seldom, usually meets on a Thursday, a work day. This is the only second Saturday meeting that I can remember, the first one being about the Bear and Cougar rule 4 years ago. And there were not very many people there from the hunting community. I was really kind of surprised. I mean, I've looked back in previous minutes, like from the Farmington meeting in late spring. There were a couple of hunters who said, no, we actually don't support this. I mean, even one who is a trapper, he is a hound hunter for mountain lions and also a trapper, and he said he did not want mountain lions to be trapped, which is kind of interesting, which makes me think that there's some other political faction that wants mountain lions dead, and it may be livestock factions, it may be deer hunters who don't want the competition. But again, we don't know, we're just speculating. Someone certainly does want more mountain lions dead.
Well, I wanted to say that this is a very timely issue, and I really regret not inviting you on the show earlier. This show will be broadcast for the first time on August 25th, and that's 2 days before the August 27th Game Commission meeting. Can you give us some information about the meeting for any listeners who are interested in attending?
Yes. And if you are from Silver City going all the way to Santa Fe for the meeting, I will reserve a halo for you, because that is a long way. The meeting starts at 8:30 in the morning, so for anyone in Silver City, you would have to pretty much leave the day before. And if you do want to do that, we are having a presentation at the Santa Fe Public Library starting at 6 to talk about, you know, what we've been talking about today, the Barron-Kruger rules, how to testify at a game commission meeting if you've never been to one. We're also going to talk about the situation with wolves, because it turns out the game commission has no love for any carnivore, and wolves have certainly been in their crosshairs too. So it's going to be at the Santa Fe Community College, the commission meeting, at starting at 8:30 in the morning. And since you have to be there the day before, we're having a rally. So get up early, come at 7:30, between 7:30 and 8. We're going to, you know, muster all of our supporters so commissioners can see us as they walk into the meeting, and hopefully make as big a fuss as we can. If you can't go to the meeting, you certainly can still send comment in all the way up to the day before. We've got on our website, riograndesierraclub.org, if you go to that homepage, the first thing that comes up is a link where you can click on a message that you can edit and send it email by email to game commissioners and the Department of Game and Fish. And I highly recommend that people do edit that message, because basically it won't appear that it comes from the Sierra Club when you send that message. It appears to come from you, which of course it does. But if you make the text different, if you make the subject line different, it will be much less likely to just be deleted. The department disparagingly calls messages that are the same, that they get over and over again, robo-emails, and they are inclined not to even tally them up, which I think is not correct. I mean, it's like signing a petition. Basically, you know, people are registering their discontent with the proposal, and they should not be dismissed as robots. But that's what the department does. So riograndesierraclub.org is where you can go to send a message to all the commissioners and the department.
And I also wanted to ask you about other issues that people may want to know more about. I mean, we don't have time to discuss those in this show today. I mean, the Mexican wolf, that could certainly take a one-hour program, and trapping could be another one-hour program. Mm-hmm. But I have a feeling, unfortunately, that this is not the end of wildlife problems in the state of New Mexico. So if people want to learn anything more about any other wildlife issues with game and fish, what could they do? How can they get involved?
A good place to start is the Hunting Proclamation, which is basically the hunting rule book. You know, get an idea of when the hunting seasons are, what species are hunted. Even if you're not a hunter, I think this is really good, important information to know, you know, because we do share the land with hunters, and a lot of people who are hunters are conservationists, there's no question. But people who are conservationists need to be aware of what's going on. We also might talk for a moment, if we have one, about, we did talk about how to avoid conflict with bears. We might talk about that with cougars.
Okay.
You know, cougars are not eating bird seed. They don't eat dog food. They pretty much kill the animals that they eat. It's really rare that a cougar will kill a human. I can think of two instances in New Mexico in the last 100 years where a mountain lion killed a human. One of them was in the, like, 1940s, and it's thought it's possible that that mountain lion was an escaped pet. The other was in Silver City, you may recall. I think it was in the late 2000s, 2008 or something like that. And I have heard that that mountain lion was actually being habituated by people, being attracted with food so that it could be photographed, but it did kill an adult man. And I can actually tell an interesting story about that, about traps, because, of course, once a cougar does that, it shall not be allowed to live, and I think that's probably wise. So the Department of Game and Fish set foot snares for this mountain lion that killed the person near Silver City. And they did catch that mountain lion, and I think they caught two and killed both of them. But before that, this is just to speak to how indiscriminate foot snares are, which are being proposed to be allowed on private and state trust land now by this new rule review for cougars. The foot snares caught a javelina. And in the javelina's thrashing, the javelina attracted a bear, which killed the javelina because the javelina could not escape. And then the bear itself was also entangled in the wire cable possibly of an additional foot snare nearby, and the bear became so badly injured by the wire that when it was found by Game and Fish, it had to be killed itself. And then separately, a horseback rider also had her horse put the foot, his hoof in one of the snares, and the horse threw the rider, and which could have been another fatality in its own right. But luckily, the horse calmed down pretty soon after, and the rider was okay, was not seriously injured. But I think you can see this is what we're proposing to allow, and I really, really hope we can avoid that from happening. There's just so much controversy about traps. We just don't need any more of them.
Okay, thank you, Mary Catherine. We're going to have to end it here. I want to thank you for being on our show today. It was very informative. Thanks to our audio engineer, Kyle Johnson, and thank you to you, our listeners, for tuning into this week's program. Please join us next week for another edition of Earth Matters. Thank you so much.
Thank you.